In Luke 18, he spake a parable unto them to this end, that men all ought always to pray and not to faint. You understand what it means to faint in the Bible? It means to quit in your mind.
Sort of like change the subject.
Like
means like to change the subject or change the...
Or just leave it alone or quit, leave off of it. Or saying, and this is a parable, saying there was in a city a judge which feared not God, neither regarded man. And there was a widow in that city, and she came unto him, saying, avenge me of mine adversary. And in the Greek it says, she came unto him over and over, avenge mine adversary, or give me justice, over and over and over. And he would not for a while, but afterward he said within himself, though I fear not God nor regard man, yet because this widow troubleth me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she weary me. He's, in other words, he's going to do it to get rid of her. You got it? Okay, now the idea is, if this unjust judge who neither feared God nor man did this, how much more, boom. And the Lord said, hear what the unjust judge saith. And shall not God avenge his own elect, which cry day and night unto him, though he bear long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth, or in the earth? Now, what does that mean? He said that when the Son of Man, he said, shall not God bring justice or bring what is right to his own elect, which cry day and night, though he bear long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. He will bring justice speedily. Now, here you got to hear this, or you'll never understand any of this. He said, I will bring it speedily, because just in the same way that the unjust judge, he's saying it to get rid of you. Not to get rid of you to dismiss you, but in the place where you should be, where you're content in all things. If you're not content in all things and you keep crying day and night, in other words, praying through, the prayer will be answered, even though at that moment he didn't find faith in the earth, i.e. the faith that says whatsoever situation that happened is of God, and even though I don't see God in it. Do you understand? All right. The reason you get lost in this is because we have made faith a commodity. Do you understand that? If you get enough faith, you get some goodies. All right. And if you didn't have a need at any particular time, there would never be a need to pray. Do you understand that? Does that communicate?
Right.
The mature believer has learned to be content in whatsoever state he finds himself. He's learned to be in abundance, he's learned to be in want, it doesn't matter. But even if in your case, the idea is that you should remain constant and content in the state that you're in, but you have this desire that says, I can't get rid of it, you can then keep on saying you trouble God night and day, until he's weary of you, and he'll give it to you, but will he find faith when he appears in the earth? You understand that? Okay, you don't. Go to Hebrews 2.
It's one of those dynamic tension things.
Keep your hand in Luke. Verse 8. What is faith? First of all,
believing in things not seen. We know it's something we don't know.
Things not hoped for.
Faith is assurance. And fundamentally, faith is the slow process by which you have the mind of God. The mind of Christ becomes your mind. Right? You understand that? Tested faith says, whatsoever state I find myself in, therein I am content. Can you hear that? Faith, then, is the difference between what you see with your senses and what you, i.e. there's something that God hasn't overcome, versus the faith that he, everything is in subjection to him. Watch. Thou hast put all things in subjection under his feet. For in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. Now, what the end result, the purpose of time and space is that we would see that all things are under him and under his authority, under his control. They're perfect. Do you understand that? It's finished. You understand? If it's finished, if I confess that he is the Christ, then I must then confess that all my heart's desires have been fulfilled in him. God is no longer an end for my means. God is the end. Does that communicate? If I am on this journey, though, and I say, I know I'm supposed to say that. I know I'm supposed to understand. I know I'm supposed to be content in all things. But the place of your but is the place of no faith. But this is what I want. Can you hear that? The act of wanting more than you have is the act of no faith. It's exactly opposite of what the word faith and what Tilton and the others teach. But even in that, he will do what? He will let you have it if you trouble him enough. Why? Because he's wary of you. But then he asked the question, but when he comes, shall he find faith in the earth?
When he comes, he returns.
When the time ends, will there be faith in your earth? In him is long suffering. Well, you have finally come to the end of all this desire and want shit and of being content in whatever state you find yourself. Okay, let's go back to you. Thou hast put all things in subjection under his feet, for in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. That's faith sees that. Do you understand? No faith sees things that aren't under him. But now we see not yet all things put under him, but we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death. The act of seeing Jesus in the place where you have no contentment is the act of faith.
The place of seeing Jesus.
And in place of seeing Jesus, you say, whatever is on your lists. Now go back to Luke 8. This is real important. It's a very subtle parable. And 99% of the commentators miss its meaning.
So when Christ came to earth, was there anyone that had faith?
Yeah, there's people that had faith in God.
Because I thought that one scripture said.
Now let's go on. Starting in verse 2 again. There was in a city, a judge in a certain city, which feared not God, neither regarded man, had no respect for God or men. And there was a widow in that city, and she came unto him, saying, avenge me of mine adversary. Bring me justice. I want justice. I want this. I want that. And he would not for a while. Just let her, he let her babble on. But afterward, he said within himself, though I fear not God nor regard man, yet because this widow troubleth me, I will avenge her. I will answer her prayer, lest by her continual coming to me, she weary me. You understand that part of it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, And the Lord said, hear what the unjust judge saith. And shall not God avenge his own elect, which cry day and night unto him, though he bear long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, and the key phrase here, you'll never understand this, is nevertheless. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man appears or cometh, shall he find faith on the earth? Does it make sense now?
Yeah, it's like he'll take care of you, but will you please him?
Will you see finally that contentment is what faith is about?
You can get what you want to your own detriment.
Yeah, because it's that you have to come to the point. The reason I'm mostly content in whatever state I find myself is because I've seen the other half of the coin. It's not worth the effort. It's ridiculous to go think about other things or chase after things or regret things. I mean, it's just stupid. There isn't any merit in it. I just found out it was stupid. That's what God calls faith. I've learned to be abased, I've learned to be abound, I've learned whatsoever state I find myself therewith to be content. There's no great merit in it, it's just experience. But if you still want something, then by definition you haven't seen fully Jesus. You haven't seen that he is the desired of the nations. He is he who has fulfilled all of your desires. And so there is more renewal of the mind necessary. In order for you to get your mind off the thing you think you want, he has to give it to you.
That's the part I don't understand. That's, I'm with you until you say, by with you, I mean, I understand what you're saying, until you say that.
He gives it.
It's like, wait a minute.
He gives it to you in order that you can see its vanity and futility and return to the place of faith. You have to have done all things or experienced all, you have to see all things as vanity. Vanity of vanity, all is vanity. Okay, if there's something that I want and I keep bugging him about it, I'm not seeing it as vain. I think it's something that's necessary for me.
I understand that.
So in order for him to cause you to see that, he gives it to you.
That it would serve its purpose.
So that it serves its purpose, so that you can have it, so that you can return to the point of not needing it anymore.
So that you can just see one or two things you just
Why does it not seem like that jives with my experience?
What experience doesn't it jive with?
I don't know. I mean, the idea of asking for it and getting it.
That's a good point. The reason that this is outside of your pale of reference and your experience is because you've not prayed. So then the reason there's no experience in this is what you do is you put it in, you put this thing you want in a closet.
Yeah.
And it's still there.
Yeah, doesn't go away.
And so therefore you have no experiential basis to experience what I'm talking about. Because you have no faith in that area, you think you shouldn't ask for it, or he's not going to do anything about it anyway. God's forsaken you in this earth.
Or I shouldn't want to ask.
Either way.
Or I should just sit and wait.
Oh, other kind of religious horseshit.
Yeah.
Am I communicating now?
Yeah, we're getting somewhere here.
Can we read it one more time? Maybe you understand.
So it's like, here, have your goddamn ice cream, eat it, get sick, and we'll move on.
The lesson is, have your manna, that didn't satisfy, then have your quails.
Right, okay.
Then have your what?
Quails.
That I understand.
First.
In the wilderness, when they weren't satisfied with the manna, he gave them the quail.
He gave so much quail, it's coming out their ears.
They were like, oh, God.
No more meat.
Oh, yes.
First they wanted bread.
Spam.
They got that. Then they wanted meat. So he gave them so much meat, and it was like...
You don't remember that?
No more meat.
Oh, God.
I remember, man.
It's one of God's greatest moments in terms of...
I just remember they were just like...
Quail up with the meat.
You know, here they should have been thankful just to have food. And they're like, yeah. Man, you
in
know...
In terms of deity comedy, it's
white sauce
point.
To go with this.
Like, yeah. Manna, again?
We don't want that.
You did that.
Well, does everybody understand it? That's what I'm asking.
Yes.
I knew it until I saw something about praying for other people.
Well, forget praying for other people. This is nothing. This doesn't have anything to do with other people. This has to do with the stupid widow.
For some reason, this is really opening up also the fact that all this stuff took place for a reason, and yet is all still taking place up here in my head, where there was a widow in my head doing the same thing with the judge. I mean, it's all timeless.
That's right.
It's cool.
Yeah, if you think of this as history, you won't understand.
Yeah.
So how did the scriptures pray without ceasing, and the one about pray but not repetitiously?
What?
Is there a scripture that says?
Well, it's one of the introduction to the Lord's Prayer, and it says. Don't pray that like the heathen do, just where you or the Pharisees do, where you just pray memorized prayers.
So he's not saying don't ask for the same thing over and over.
Of course not.
Okay.
Go to Exodus 16. No. Go to Exodus. Yeah, Exodus 16. Exodus 16, verse 12. I've heard the murmurings of the children of Israel speak unto them, saying, At even you shall eat flesh, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God. And it came to pass that at even the quails came up and covered the camp, and in the morning the dew, the manna, lay round about the host. And when the dew that lay was gone up, behold, upon the face of the wilderness there lay a small round thing, as small as the hairy frost on the ground. And when the children of Israel saw it, they said one to another, It is manna, for they wist not what it is. And Moses said unto them, This is the bread which the Lord. Anyway, then we go on down, and you'll see pretty soon he gave them more quail than they could eat. But before we do that, let's go to Numbers 11. Verse 1. And when the people complained, it displeased the Lord, and the Lord heard it. And his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burnt among them, and consumed them that were in the uttermost parts of the camp. And the people cried unto Moses, and when Moses prayed unto the Lord, the fire was quenched. And he called the name of the place Taberah, because of the fire of the Lord burnt them. And the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting. And the children of Israel also wept again and said, Who shall give us flesh to eat? We remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt freely, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. But now our soul is dried away. There is nothing at all besides this manna before our eyes. And the manna was as coriander seed, and the color thereof is the color of bdellium. And the people went about and gathered it and ground it in mills, or beat it like mortar, and baked it in pans, and made cakes of it, and the taste of it was as the taste of fresh oil. And when the dew fell upon the camp in the night, the manna fell upon it. Then Moses heard the people weep through their families, every man in the door of his tent, and the anger of the Lord was kindled greatly. Moses also was displeased. And Moses said unto the Lord, Wherefore hast thou afflicted thy servant? And wherefore have I not found favor in thy sight, that thou layest the burden of all this people upon me? Have I not conceived all this people? Have I begotten them? That thou shouldest say unto me, Carry them in thy bosom, as a nursing father beareth a suckling child into the land which thou swearest unto their fathers to give them? Whence should I have flesh to give unto this people? For they weep unto me, saying, Give us flesh, that we may eat. I am not able to bear all this people alone, because it is too heavy for me. And if thou deal thus with me, kill me, I pray thee, out of a hand. If I have found favor in thy sight, let me not see my wretchedness. Where in the hell is it?
It's
supposed to be.
It's coming. It's coming. It's coming. It's coming.
God tells him he's going to eat flesh.
God says, "Oy vey.
You shall not eat one day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, neither 10 days, nor 20 days, but even a whole month until it can out of your nostrils and be loathsome."
Okay. Go now. Okay, that's what he's talking about. That's when they were complaining about the manna. Now go over to.
No, that's the quail.
Where?
Verse 20. You're going to eat so much quail, it's going to come out of their noses.
Tomorrow you shall have flesh, in verse 18, for you have wept in the ears.
Oh, yeah, okay. And thou say unto the people, sanctify yourselves against tomorrow, and ye shall eat flesh, for you have wept in the ears of the Lord, saying, who shall give us flesh to eat? For it was well with us in Egypt. Therefore the Lord will give you flesh, and you shall eat. You shall not eat 1 day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, neither 10 days, nor 20 days, but even a whole month until it come out your nostrils. And it be loathsome unto you, because that you have despised the Lord which is among you, and have wept before him, saying, why came we forth out of Egypt? And Moses said, the people among whom I am are 600,000 footmen. And thou hast said, I will give them flesh, that they may eat the whole month. Shall the flocks of the herds be slain for them to suffice them, or shall the fish of the sea be gathered together to suffice them? And the Lord said unto Moses, is the Lord's hand waxed short? Thou shalt now see whether my word shall come to pass or not, unto thee or not. And Moses went out and told the people the words of the Lord, and gathered the 70 men of the elders of the tabernacle. You see how, in the first place, do you see how, like, Moses, he argues with God a lot?
It's amazing how much credit we give God. I mean, like, yeah, after he makes everything, he just, you know.
Yeah.
Well, he's just like, well, no faith here, though.
Yeah, he always does.
Moses?
Yeah.
Was he a bad guy?
This is the stuff that makes you feel okay, like when Jonah and Moses and all these guys go into Olympic whining, and I think.
They don't compare to you.
Oh, yeah, they do.
I like the way Moses always says, kill me.
He's so shooty.
I mean, it's like he always plays fast and loose with Moses.
And the Lord came down in a cloud and spake unto him and took of the Spirit that was upon him, and gave it unto the 70 elders. And it came to pass that when the Spirit rested upon them, they prophesied and did not cease. But there remained two of the men of the camp. The name of one was Eldad, and the other was Medad. And the Spirit shut up, and the Spirit rested upon them, and they were of them that were written. But they went not unto the tabernacle, and they prophesied in the camp. And there ran a young man and told Moses, and said, Eldad and Medad do prophesy in the camp. And Joshua, son of Nun, the servant of Moses, one of his young men, answered and said, my lord, Moses forbid them. And Moses said unto him, enviest thou for my sake? Would God that all the Lord's people were prophets, and that the Lord would put his Spirit upon them. And Moses got him into the camp, and he and the elders of Israel. And there went forth a wind from the Lord, and brought quails from the sea, and let them fall by the camp, as it were a day's journey on this side, and as it were a day's journey on the other side, round about the camp, as it were 2 cubits high upon the face of the earth. And the people stood up all that day, and all that night, and all the next day, and they gathered the quails. He that gathered least gathered 10 omers.
Homers.
That's a whole bunch. And they spread them all abroad for themselves round about the camp. And while the flesh was yet between their teeth, ere it was chewed, the wrath of the Lord was kindled against the people. And the Lord smote the people with a very great plague. And he called the name of the place Kibroth Hattaavah, because there they buried the people that lusted.
You want to know why I don't pray?
Really?
Really? This one, I was 10 years old.
Good point, Harry.
This is one of the ones I remember.
I'll give you what you want.
I'll give you a quail.
I'll give you what you want until it comes out your nostrils.
I'll give you a quail.
This really does put fear of God.
It's a good thing.
Okay.
Now, let's look at some others. Let's look at a couple other places. Let's go to, let's read again. No, let's not read that. No, that's enough. Let's read our lists.